Hey guys, just wanted to let you know about a cool upcoming event we have planned. On March 23rd at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, Definitely Dying will be hosting our first ever live virtual reality show. We've teamed up with the lovely people from Jash Comedy and the tech wizards from Alt Space VR to bring you a truly special event.
And if you don't have VR, don't worry. You can still join in on the fun by grabbing the Alt Space VR app on the Oculus Rift, the HTC Vive, the Samsung Gear VR, and even on your Mac or PC. Be sure to follow us on our Definitely Dying Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for event updates, and we'll see you in virtual space. Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash.
Is that a rash?
And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Smell like?
I got a thing on the side of my ear.
I haven't cried in 3 years.
Welcome back to Definitely Dying.
Ooh, I like that.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, as always. It's a Tuesday if you're listening. The first moment that you can get your hands on this bad boy, or any other day that you're listening. We
and
hope it's a good
Wednesday.
One. Yeah, maybe
if you're nasty.
If you're nasty, it's a Wednesday. We hope you're feeling nasty. Madeline, you feeling nasty today?
I'm feeling so nasty.
You're a nasty woman.
Yeah. The only nice thing that's happened since Trump is I feel like he's really catapulted nasty back into the vernacular in a way that's very fun to use.
Yeah. No, not since Janet Jackson has it meant such positivity.
Nasty.
Nasty. So what's going on? Didn't you have some car troubles this
I
week?
I did. I had some car troubles. Well, my car is old. It's like almost 10 years old.
Oh man, I didn't know that.
It's like, I guess maybe this is how some people feel about a kid, where I'm like, I'm like, whoa, how is my car already almost 10?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I keep thinking of it as a brand new car.
Yeah, me too.
But it's an 08, so I guess it's 2017, so in a year it'll be 10 years old. And it's got like 95,000 miles on it. And so it's like, my goal is for it to last it's a Sentra, a Nissan Sentra, so I feel like it could get another 50,000 easily, right?
Oh,
like,
sure.
That feels like
more.
Those kinds of cars you run into the ground at, like, 200,000 miles.
Not where we're from, but here for sure.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Right?
No,
yeah.
I feel like my aunt and uncle, who are, the people who I know that have lived here forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they put a car to rest at, like, 300,000 miles.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
probably extreme,
sure.
But yeah, you...
But yeah, I don't have any interest in getting a new car. I don't want one. I just want my old one to work.
Yeah.
I'd been noticing kind of a grinding sort of sound. Hmm. It sounded a little bit like the wheel was like not, I don't know, it was like hitting something and for a while I thought it was like related to my struts, because like the last time I took my car to the mechanic, they recommended maybe replacing the struts, but then like their boss said for me to not do it because he was like, it's too expensive. And so I thought it was strut related, and then I kind of ignored it. And then Ben drove my car on like Saturday, and he was like, your car's so noisy. What's going on? And then I was like, oh, it's real. And so I brought it in, and I like my explanation of what I needed the mechanic to do basically boiled down to like, can you tell me everything will be okay? Because I was like, there's this weird noise, but also like, you know, there's like another weird noise, and also my car's kind of old, and like I basically told him everything I just told you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was just like, okay, we'll just check it out. We'll just check it right out. And so, like, I was really worried. Having something small wrong with my car made me go through the mental process of, like I was already to the point of, like, well, when I need to get rid of this car, I wonder, will I get a new car, or will Ben and I share his car, and maybe I'll just try to like lift an Uber everywhere. And like, I was already like trying to do the math in my head of like, how much would it cost to lift everywhere versus how much it costs to like pay for my car insurance every month. And like, I was just like, I went from A, like all the way to Z immediately. Yeah. And it may, at least it, I thought it was a good example of like what I think we identified in a previous podcast as like hypocondria.
Right.
And just like totally like an example of exactly the way that my brain works.
And
I think an insight into my hypochondria, which is like, again, like less an obsession with my health per se, but more a tendency to like, imagine and try to prepare for the worst case scenario when there's no indication that that scenario is what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So usually in those sort of situations, if you were say going to an actual doctor as opposed to a mechanic,
yes,
whatever that thing was, it would not act up when the doctor was looking at it. So did that happen mechanically?
Yes. There was like, so they fixed the wheel bearing and that was fine. It was like a few hundred bucks, no big deal. But then they this little like whistling sound that I told them to look out for. He was like, I didn't hear anything.
Of course not.
And then I left the mechanic after picking up my car and it started again.
Yeah.
And I almost drove away, but then I turned around and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Can you, I heard it. I heard it. So maybe you could hear it. He was like, okay, let's take your car around the block and we'll try to hear it. And we didn't hear it.
Of course not.
No, I felt crazy.
Like every trick knee in history.
Yes. And then I dropped him back off. And then when I left, as soon as I pulled out, I heard it again. But I realized, I think it was because when he got in the car, I turned off the AC because I was like, oh, I'll make the car quiet so he can hear it.
So it's an AC problem.
Oh,
you figured it out.
So I figured it out.
Yeah, so you're
a mechanic.
But
then the crazy thing I did was call him to tell him I figured it out.
Oh, yeah, that is crazy.
I was like, hi, this is, hi, I just left. I realized I think it's the AC. Well, because I didn't hear it without the AC. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's probably the AC. And I was like, but does that hurt the rest of my car?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, just don't use your AC unless it's really hot. And I was like, but does it hurt the rest of my car?
Yeah.
And he was like, just don't use your AC unless it's hot.
Feels like you should check that out.
Yeah.
Not even because I think it could damage your car, but it seems like the kind of thing that, like, you always hear about these like air conditioning things and they're costing you more money, like in gas mileage and crap like that.
I think like I had my AC fixed a couple years ago and I think people who did a bad job.
Like they left the scalpel in there when they sewed you up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, because my AC also does a weird thing of if I've been driving for an hour without stopping, my AC like kind of stops being cold. But as soon as I turn my car off and start it back up, it's cold again. It's still cold inside, but it feels like it gets like trapped inside the car and can't blow fully.
Sounds to me like you got a problem with your compressor. It's the only word I could ever use. It doesn't really sound like that. I don't know. It doesn't sound like anything to me. I mean, it sounds like something to me specifically.
Yeah.
I would have no clue. But I've noticed that if you say it sounds like your compressor, people believe you.
Well, and he told me another thing that this is the kind of thing that's like going to itch my brain, which he was like, when we had it up on the lifters, your transmission was making a little noise, but it was so faint that when I was driving, we don't hear it. So he's like, but we don't do transmissions. Transmissions are very expensive. And I was like, well, do I need to take it in? And he was like, only take it in if it gets worse. And I was like, well, if I can't hear it, how do I know if it's getting worse? And he was like, just see if it gets worse. See if your car, he was like, I noticed your car had a little trouble shifting gears, but if that gets worse, take it in. And that's like, this is now what I'll, like, every time I drive my car now, this is what I'll be worried about, my transmission. And that is a ton of money to fix.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, that's obviously something to pay attention to, I guess. So like maybe the answer is if you do notice it, then you'll know that it's a real problem. But it seems to me that like a problem with the transmission isn't the kind that like currently, at least up until today, like the air pressure kept like lowering in my tires.
Oh.
And then that like emergency light would come on saying you need to fill up these tires. Right. And so like with that, I promptly went to a service station, not a service station, to a gas station and filled up my tires because if that becomes problematic, my tire blows out and then I spin around on the freeway and me and everyone I know dies.
Yeah.
Because I only drive alongside everyone I know. But in your case, it seems like it would result in just difficulty switching gears. Like, you would just hear, like, you would, there'd be kind of a hitch when you switched from, you know, first gear to second gear.
Yeah.
And then you'd be like, oh, okay, like, this is a problem for the car, but not so much for, like, Madeline. Like, Madeline's not going to die because of the transmission thing, probably.
No.
I don't know why I say this with such confidence, having no automotive acumen whatsoever. But it feels right to me.
I think,
you're going to live.
I hope so. I feel like what I don't like that my mechanic keeps doing, he's like cool, he's a good mechanic, but I don't like how much he keeps asking me to use my own judgment about things, because I don't trust my own judgment at all.
That's why you came in.
But I guess, you know, it's just a part. It's the same as if someone says, like, if, you know, the pain in your leg gets worse, come see me. And it's like, how do you, like... And if that's what I'm focused on, then it's going to get worse.
Right, right.
So I guess I'm going to ignore my transmission unless it's bad enough that I notice.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, because basically what he's saying is that that you shouldn't notice. Like, he currently is saying that you shouldn't notice. So if you suddenly start noticing, that's the bad thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So we're fine.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Nice.
Great.
Should we start the show?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, nice.
We have a very special guest for you today. You've seen him all over the place. He was recently one of Comedy Central's comics to watch. You can see him on a little Go 90 series called Thanksgiving. You can see him all around New York City performing his wonderful show, Josh Sharp Sings, which is a great way of saying his name is Josh Sharp.
Wow.
He's all also a very dear friend of mine. We've known each other since...
Since we were babes, really.
Since we were little babies.
That's true.
Since 2000,
I guess it would have been maybe six or seven.
Probably. Yeah.
I remember when your now husband told me that, like, hey, I think Madeline and I are dating.
Yeah.
He wasn't sure yet.
Sort of. I think he was trying to, like soft sell it. You know, I think he knew, but he wanted to be like, so weird thing. I guess Madeline and I are dating. You know,
I think when he said that to Reed asked if I was maybe pranking him.
Well, it's also like, I think it was a little bit where we just weren't aware that there'd been a courtship.
No, right. It happened very fast.
It happened quick. That was why he was sort of like,
a week or two.
Turns out we're dating. Yeah. You know,
you describe it like the way that people talk about having sold a sitcom, where like it could fall through at any moment. Like, I don't want to. Like fingers crossed,
it was
like this thing's going to go through.
Yeah. Like, who knows what'll happen.
Ben was like, we got the Big Bang guys attached, so we're like feeling good. They're going to supervise.
They're green lighting Madeline.
I don't know.
So Josh, here's the question that we like to kick things off with.
I'm so psyched.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
I guess... Let's call it a 6 or a 7, maybe a 6. I'll go with my gut and say 6.
Okay. Why?
I would say I'm fairly existentialist about these things. So sometimes I think it's fun to think about.
Oh, yeah.
I don't worry about it too much.
Oh, no?
Not in like a cocky rock and roll way.
Right.
Sure, sure.
I just think, like, it's fun to think about sometimes.
Like, what would be an example of, so like you take sort of a philosophical approach to these things.
I guess
things.
That's probably true.
So like what would a typical death thought be?
I'm fully convinced I'm going to die in a crosswalk hit by a car.
Oh,
really?
And so sometimes I'll think of it, and it's not like I don't want for it.
No,
do you know what I mean?
No.
It's
like,
I think some people get off on it. I just, feels like a, there's a part of me that just feels certain that's going to happen.
Have you thought that for a long time?
For a few years. Certainly since being in New York, I think is part of it, because you are like, it's a pedestrian culture there.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm truly a dum-dum. So I think, like, there have been so many times where I've been just like listening to something or not paying attention or being a GD idiot on my iPhone device and been like, whoa, I could have been hit by a car.
Have you ever been pulled out of traffic right before
close of a call?
Yeah.
I've twice had to like slap a car. Like, it was the car's fault, but there's like an intersection that's like not a great intersection mm-hmm. near my house that I have to frequent. And oftentimes these cars will like try to sneak a left in without paying attention to if a pedestrian's coming. Because they have like the green and they'll do that. So there's twice been have been ones that have sort of sped in front of me that I like slapped them to like be like, I'm here. One I nearly threw a coffee at. I was so mad. But I think I was in a mood.
You know,
some of it's like you just want to be like, these are my rights. Because it is the law. It's like, you have to yield to me, Bruster.
Yeah, it is the law.
It is the law. Yeah. And these are your rights.
But also, I feel like the culture for that is different here. Because all of my New York friends are not all, but often I feel like when a New York friend moves here, it's like inevitable that like every couple of months I see someone from New York who's a transplant post like, by the way, just a reminder, do not jaywalk in this town.
No, you'll
get a ticket.
You'll get a ticket. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It happens often. I find New Yorkers who are here and they just like jaywalk and then someone gives them an $180 ticket.
Well, because this is a city that belongs to cars and New York is a city that belongs to pedestrians, I feel like.
Exactly.
Like if you like you're wrong if you walk here and you are wrong if you drive in New York.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
When you are feeling existential about death, what do you have like... What are some flights of fancy you like to go on?
I don't even, it's not even that I like imagine it so much. Like that, the thing I mentioned just feels like some part of me just is certain that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's that there's a part of me that is a little delight. I mean, a lot of it has to do, my mom died like 5 years ago of cancer. And I do think that was like, and there's a long story to it, but it like sort of went about as positive as that thing can go. There were like a lot of like sort of beautiful moments in it.
Yeah.
But I remember having like, feelings after that where I was like, oh, like that being the awakening of like, oh, I'm going to die and being like totally cool with it. Because like seeing how hers went down was very much like, if you could choose how to have cancer and die, it's like there was a lot of like beautiful moments to it.
How did yours go down or as much as you want to share?
Well, how long is this podcast?
You got an hour, baby.
No. I'll tell the story. It's like some of it is like I remember you've heard some of this story, but it's like... like my mom got ovarian cancer and then went into remission. And then like when I was like a senior in college, it like recurred, which with ovarian cancer means you're incurable. It doesn't mean like you'll have it forever, but it means you'll have it. And you'll die of this thing. You know, you might last like a little while, but it's like you're not going to go back into remission. So then there was a time where I remember, you know, and have you been had anyone with cancer in your life?
Not death. But I've been. Yeah.
I was. I don't think you have.
Yeah.
Or
only
am I wrong?
Old. Only my grandma, but she was like already. Was already old, so it wasn't the impact wasn't like as extreme because she wasn't taken from us very. You know.
Yeah.
Like
and,
yeah.
And even more than like that impact, that's true. But I was thinking of like that experience of chemo is one where it's like it's just like. It sucks, sort of. Like, you kind of, like, because you're frying your body to try and get rid of the cancer.
Yeah.
Like, strong enough to get rid of the cancer, but not to kill you, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing where you, like, just feel, like, shitty for 3 weeks and then, like, okay for a week and then you do it again. It's not really living, you know? And it gets, like, more and more aggressive.
Yeah.
So then at a certain point, they had this non-FDA approved, like, double-blind trial drug for liver cancer that they were like, let's just see if it works, right? Like, let's throw it in the cocktail with everything else. Right. Double-blind meaning neither my mom nor the doctor would know if she got the real thing or a placebo.
Who knows?
The pharmaceutical company.
Okay, okay.
It's in trial. They're just testing it. Yeah. It hasn't been approved. No one can get it. They just, like, send it to people to be like, if you have a patient that it's not going to matter if they get this, you know, like it's not going to hurt, then like if they're at a stage where it's like, might as well try, do it.
Yeah.
And it's for research, right? So then like a couple months in, my mom's cancer indicators dropped in a good way. And so then my dad has told me before, it was like this surreal moment where they went into the doctor, whose real last name is Vanderkwok.
Vanderkwok?
Yeah. It's fun. It's just a fun detail.
God bless.
You know, life's in the details. And he sort of had this story with him because, like, giving someone, they had been able to deduce that my mom had been on the placebo and then they fucked up and gave her someone else's medicine. And then she got the real medicine and then it worked. But, like, in that field, like, giving someone the wrong medicine is, like, a huge liability. So they had this really surreal conversation where he's like, listen, like, your mom, like, Amy, you were on sugar pills, and then we accidentally gave you the medicine, and it's working. Like, we're sorry. Please don't sue. And it's sort of like, what are you like, this sounds amazing, right? Like,
that's amazing, yeah.
So then the bigger miracle is then they convinced the pharmaceutical company to remove my mother from the blind and just give her the medicine. You know, pharmaceutical company's not known for being the most caring.
That's unbelievable.
So then she just, like, got this medicine for a while and was, like, fully better for about a year. And, stopped chemo. Like, we knew it wasn't going to last, but had, like, a year of that. So then... she went into like full, she was always like a lovely, supportive woman, but we weren't, you know, like she wasn't a confrontational or like, you know, but she went full Dolly Mama and was like, I want to fucking do it all. And so we would talk about like God and politics and everything. Like she wanted to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that time, she like helped me come out of the closet. She like, she was like really wanting to know and be known. Huh. And so like that whole thing was such an experience where I was like, oh my God, not, I mean, no one's asking me, but I wouldn't. Yeah. It's like you would, that year was worth so much of the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Right. Like, oh no, what, totally.
Like that year is like bound up in her sickness in a way that you can't be like, I wouldn't have had it without her sickness. You know, and it's like, it's a very strange thing. So I remember like watching, and then there was another weird thing where even after that started to wane, she ended up going into hospice because it was like, I don't want to be on, she was getting fed through a tube, right? She was like intervened because she couldn't digest things. So they're like, she was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, it's, we're going to go into hospice. I'm going to go into end of life care.
Yeah.
And then she was having some discomfort a couple days in. So they gave her this steroid to help with it. Mm-hmm. And then it just meant she had energy and lasted 4 months in hospice. Like at every chapter, there was all these weird things where it's like, she was like driving around with her IV bag and everybody in town. And people were like, I thought she was in hospice. You know, and she was like driving her minivan around. Yeah, truly. So it was wild. So I feel like a lot of that experience on the other end, after like processing the grief, I feel like I don't feel a lot of sadness about that anymore. One, in a personal reason, she like sort of helped me come out of the closet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But,
and just like I got to know my mom in a way that I didn't get to know. And it like bonded my brothers and I together even more than we were.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things where I was like, if death can go like that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like,
what are we afraid? Because you're not due the day you're born.
Sure, sure.
So it's like we didn't choose to be alive, much less to die. But like seeing that it can happen like that was like a thing where I then would start to wrap my head around like, oh, death isn't like inherently a negative aspect.
Yeah. Right, right.
Which just makes, like birth isn't inherently positive.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
They're just like things that happen.
I haven't found any positives in my birth yet. moving on. No, I haven't.
Come on. Not even the podcast.
It was really painful for my mom. It makes sense then that you would have sort of this this existential response to death. But it also makes sense that then where your brain would go to would be to the like the most immediate sort of like unforeseen death that you can imagine, just walking along, minding your own business, not thinking about, no cares in the world. And then all of a sudden a car plows into you. And there is no like that period of like getting to get really deep with those people that are closest to you with sort of a new sense of perspective on life, you know?
Yeah.
Especially given that your mom, the way you described it, it's like you didn't come out of any of these experiences feeling like, oh, mom's going to live forever. It's just that you get more and more time with her, and that more and more time seemed really positive.
Yes. And so I think I put my, like, and again, that, like, it's weird. I haven't thought about that thing as connected to that experience as much, because clearly getting hit by a car is not like I get to gather everybody around.
Right.
And have, like, my mom had a lot of that. But I do think
it's
put me in that place where it's like, everything good has already happened. I sort of think that every day. It's like everything good has already, just more good things keep happening until they stop happening.
Right.
But it's like, if I were to get hit by a car outside right now, I'd be like, well, I mean, it was pretty good, wasn't it?
It's like leaving a party a little too early.
Yeah,
it's like when
still was a good
still
party.
Feels great. Yeah. Yeah.
So would you rather die on your best day or your worst day?
Oh my God. I guess I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter, right?
I don't know. Would you, Madeline, would you?
Best day.
Best day.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you'd rather feel good, but like best and worst day, it's so selfish, isn't it? It's like to who, you know?
Well, I mean, specifically you.
But I mean, it's that thing where it's like, one farmer wants rain and someone else loses the house because it gets flooded. So it's like, I don't know. You're right. It would feel good to feel good when you die, but who cares? It's all the same.
Yeah.
It feels like your mom, you know, had this like year plus of life where she kind of like shifted the way that she was living in a pretty drastic way that had like a ton of positive ripples. Did that change at all the way like you approach the time you have now?
I wonder if it will. I mean, yes, I guess is a short answer, but I feel like not in the way that she has. Because also she was at a period where she had like, she was like 50 and she'd had kids and she was like, and she sort of got like sunk in even more to some of her spiritual aspects and stuff like that. So that's like a certain type of like how to value that day. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, I shouldn't say obviously, I would say like, I don't take away from it that necessarily. Cause it's like, I don't have this stamp of like, oh, I know for certain this ovarian cancer will kill me in 6 months. So if like I'm not always that caught up in like you have to treat every day like it's your last.
Sure.
Because sometimes I think that's a weird undue pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it did feel like it like alleviated some of the pressure of that thing. Because it's like, I think for me, it almost twisted it to the other side where I was like, everything good is like everything that's happened is good.
Yeah,
I'm like
yeah.
very lucky and privileged and fortunate.
Yeah, that pressure to like, you don't have to try to squeeze
true.
More
no, 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 it's
out
like,
of,
it sort of is happening.
Yeah.
But it probably has in subtle ways that I think about that. But I certainly don't think I'm in this frame of reference where I'm just like super zen and trying to make every day special.
Right. I think trying to make every day special is not a healthy thing.
Yeah. Sometimes, because it's like, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta rest.
And so also there's something like special about just a normal everyday routine where like I think when you strive, I think sometimes people hear make everyday special and they think they should feel the best all the time. And that's like not a thing that we're built to feel. No. And I think it makes people go a little crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. When it's like sometimes you have to like I'm not against setting goals or like having a direction, but you have to be pretty open to like whatever happens happens.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of like try to figure out how to accept and work with things.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, obviously I'm speaking from a position of pronounced privilege. Yes. It's very easy to be laissez-faire. Yeah. As a white man.
We actually
recorded
this from a Boys and Girls Club of America. This is primarily underprivileged people making their way through here.
Yeah, we leave the kids.
The podcast audience.
We're supposed to be watching some kids and we just sort of let them sit in the hall while we do the podcast.
Think about death.
So you have always felt to me like a relatively fearless person. Is that, do you think that's accurate or?
Maybe, but doesn't that feel like a strain? But I guess I should say, yes, I do feel that way, but not necessarily that is. I think sometimes people ascribe that to being like something like honorable or brave or something you've done. I think it's sort of random. Like I do think some of it's just our makeup. Like I don't feel very hypochondriatic or I don't worry a lot, but I don't think it's, I guess some part of it must be a choice on my own part, but it's so informed by all these experiences. Yeah. And also I think sometimes these things are just like dispositions.
Yeah. Well, cause I'm curious.
But yes,
like,
I do think that's
feel
true,
like,
but sometimes that question feels
like,
loaded with like, maybe, yeah, I've just like chosen to not. And it's like, I don't know.
No.
It seems sort of easy to me.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm kind of curious about. Cause like you, to me, you're maybe like the least neurotic person I know. I feel that that's true. Like,
I'm not very neurotic.
No, you're not neurotic at all.
Everyone has neuroses.
Sure.
You know.
But I'm so curious about that because I feel like, especially on this podcast, I mean, like we just sort of steep ourselves in our neuroses and talk about them and like talk to other people about what they feel neurotic about. So I'm curious what, like, have you always felt fairly free of neuroses?
Sort
Do you feel
of,
like it's kind of how you're
built? The opposite side is like, I think it took me a while to realize that like, my brain sometimes functions at a hyper rational level in a way that I now feel like approaches sociopathic. Where I think sometimes I'm like apt to be sort of callous because I'm like, I mean, I like to feel my feelings to be clear, but I think I'm sometimes like immediately processing things or like extrapolating what's really going on in a way that I don't always think is healthy.
Like,
it's like I have trouble
example?
Sleeping sometimes because I can't turn my brain off. Like when I'm like, when I'm like halfway between consciousness and unconsciousness, I'll start to just list things
like what?
In my head, like should I need to do?
Yeah.
Or I'll fully have conversation. I'll like write emails in my head when I'm trying to fall asleep, and I like can't make myself not just be like, so sometimes I feel bad at resting / feel like I like not worrying about things.
Yeah.
But it sometimes means that I wish I would like chill a bit.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
but I guess it's a different thing is what I'm saying. It's like the people who worry are like, I wish I could stop worrying so I could get things done.
Well,
and sometimes I feel like I'm just like obsessing over all the things I need to do or processing things through a lens of like stripping myself from it in a way that maybe is not always healthy.
Do you have experiences where your own emotions make you not see things clearly? Or do you feel like you're able very easily to separate, to like to place that same logic in onto yourself? Like,
I think it ends up being a thing where like I will like I'll over talk or over plan or whatever. Like I think my neuroses is I'll be like playing out all this stuff, like in like I do it with Aaron a lot, where it's like, yeah. I'll like say out loud like the checklist of the things we have to do
a lot.
Or I'll be playing out all the like, we should, you know, I think we should email this person. Like, I'm assuming they'll say this and then we'll be able to do this. And like, it's that form of neuroses where I'm like playing out all the events. And sometimes it's like, you should just chill and see, let them respond to the email.
Yeah.
And then we'll decide. Right. Yeah. But I'm already like, I imagine that we're going to get an okay back on this and then we should do blank and we should do whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think that's like a negative thing.
No, sometimes
it almost turns into a neuroses where, because I'm not really worried. I'm just like wanting to be prepared.
Yeah.
I'm wanting to already like have all these moves.
You don't want to be like caught by surprise. No. Yeah. Yeah. I understand. I feel like that, like, I can identify that with that a little bit. Like the, like, I feel like sometimes I will, like, I'm also not great at resting. And I feel like it, because like sometimes when I keep myself in motion, it like stops that sort of listing thing in my brain where it's like when I stop, all of a sudden it's like a ticker of like all the things I need to do. Do you feel like, is that what you feel like?
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, as people who are hypochondriatic, right? Like, are you truly like often worried about the state of your health?
Well, it's different for each of us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so for me, I just hit my mic. So for me, I feel like my hypochondria is much more like a symptom of sort of general anxiety. So it's like one of those things where like I will always be worried about something, and it's like a little bit of like a hierarchy, you know? So it's like if something is immediately actually happening that like is truly problematic, that's usually when I'm at my least anxious, because I'm just solving a problem. I am actually very like calm in a true crisis. Mm-hmm. But then when things are like pretty good, it's like the first thing I'll worry about is like work, like what do I need to do? What am I not doing? Like, what am I sort of falling short of? And then if that's going pretty well, then like a lot of times the next thing on the list will be like, is this like rash really Lyme's disease? Or like, am I like grinding my teeth so much that like I'll have little like nub teeth in a few years, you know? So it's like, so I will a lot of times.
No, you've got big, beautiful teeth.
Long. They're not. Well, my dentist told me he told me it's okay to grind your teeth because cavemen do it. But some people with my teeth would already want fake teeth.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's a story for a different day. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well. Do you have an electric toothbrush?
Yeah. I did that a couple years ago. Yeah. And then I also stopped getting whitening toothpaste. That was the other thing I was told.
Whitening toothpaste recedes your gums?
Well, basically anything with whitening has some form of an abrasive agent in it, you know? And it's like, if you have gum receding gums, it's like you just want like normal paste. You know, like you really just want baking soda.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all toothpaste. It's insane that toothpaste is a thing we pay a lot of money
for.
And
the bubbles, that's not necessary. The bubbling stuff is just an agent they put in the toothpaste to make you feel.
We're being fooled by everybody always.
Yes,
but I mean, I was told by the dentist where he's like, just get like the normal fluoride paste, period. Because like anything that's like with whitening means there's something that's like.
It ruins the enamel on your teeth and enamel never comes back.
I've been using like serious whitening toothpaste, and my gums are also receding.
Yeah,
do you just use fluoride?
No, I mean I don't remember which one I currently. I just basically get the big tube of the like the little tube the dentist gives you. I just get the big tube of that.
I get the like Crest Plain.
Yeah, something.
I gotta
like that.
Change my Whatever toothpaste. So I tend to make up things that don't, or I tend to fixate on physical problems that don't exist.
Interesting.
But Ben's, you're different. Oh, would you want, like, explain, well, like, no, I don't want to.
I just think when I'm actually sick, I think it could be, like, probably worse than it is. But, no, I almost never think. I'm always sick when I think I'm sick. It's just not the thing that I think it is usually. Yeah, I would say, in a nutshell.
Yeah. Where do you think yours comes from?
I'm getting sick.
And
not knowing what it was and it not going away quickly.
Yours is like almost more of a response to the unknown or something.
I mean, that's the thing is, and I don't know how much of it has to do with aging or what, or just not coming up with a solution, but just like it isn't always the biggest form of sicknesses that don't go away. That's the thing is, like, often, you know, a lot of times we're having allergic reactions and we don't realize that we don't know what we're allergic to, so we just feel like we're sick for like long periods of time. Or, you know, in my case, mine started when I had this this like dysphagia thing. I like couldn't swallow solid food for like 3 months, and it didn't turn out to be that big a deal in like the sort of the grand, you know, diagnostic sense of things. It just ruined my life for like 3 months, you know. And so yeah, like every day when it didn't get better, and I had like ruled out a thing that it wasn't. It was just like a new thing, and I'm good at like I'm you know sort of a I think it's a common theme among those who embrace their neuroses and those who disavow knowledge of their neuroses. We do sort of that thing that you were talking about, which is like we create a list of all possible things that we would have to solve in advance of having to solve them so that we don't have to feel anxiety. And so in my case, I think I came up with like a list of like 15 different things that it could be based on just being someone who's capable enough to use the internet positively. Like right. I can actually get past that thing. Like WebMD is not a fear for me because I know not to be stupid about it.
Right.
But there are like a million different diagnoses on there and I would sort of toy with all of them.
Yeah. But you are inherently worried that it's going to be worse than it is, sort of.
Just that it's never going to change, that this becomes my new normal. Whenever a bad thing happens and it's like the thought that, yeah, like the swallowing solid foods thing, it was just like so much of like, it's not even so much of my happiness. It's so much of what I know about overcoming sadness was like just eating solid food, you know?
right.
Like it was just like, I'm sad and now I want to like eat my feelings away. And I would feel really, really sad. And there was just like nothing I could do. Like I could be like, all right, I'm going to drown my sorrows in like a cup of butternut squash broth, you know? And that would be like, basically I ate carrot broth and or whatever you call it like a and butternut squash broth and then water for 3 months and it was just like the worst. And then you start to wonder, like, you know, you start to understand, I guess, there, you at least you have that perspective on why, like, no, people sometimes don't want to live anymore, you know. And I don't consider myself at any point during that suicidal. I just think that there was a period where I like wondered if this was as good as it was gonna get and if it was worth it having it not, like, I was never going to do anything, but I questioned if it was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 3 months, no foods. It was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was bad. I remember really bad. That was really bad.
So I get that because I think I do share that thing, especially what you were saying, but both of you. But, like, I think mine ends up being more about control than being about fear, where it's like when I play out all those things, it's not because I'm actually worried about how it's going to go. It's like I would rather be the, always like ready to like make the moves and do the things.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, I think our like life is so silly and our bodies are so dumb.
Yeah.
Like, like at every level, like the things that just like all of this nonsense is truly wild, you know? So it's like the only thing you can sort of do is try to rationalize it or just like realize where you have control in the circumstances in which you're in, whether they're like health related or fear related or whatever, like sort of any circumstance. It's easy. It's like not hard to like zoom out and be like, well, that's ridiculous.
It's really ridiculous, isn't it?
So I think sometimes it makes me laugh almost, but then I think sometimes then my brain just wants to be like, well, all I can do is sort of like recognize what's ridiculous about this.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then try to like either deal with it or get rid of it or find the element where I can have control.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's rarely that I'm worried about how things are going to go. It's just like, I don't want to wait and see how they go sometimes. Or I have to remind myself to like choose to wait and see how things go.
Yeah.
Because otherwise my natural tendency is to like be plotting things out. I have to tell myself, like, oh, actually, it's cool. Wait.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think sickness is a fool that I have a hard time suffering, you know, like in the same way that, like, if I'm having a conversation with a real dummy, it's like hard for me to like, it's hard for me to see the conversation
again,
on both ends.
I'm sorry
ends.
Again about being so dumb.
You're just going to walk into traffic as soon as we leave here.
Here's hoping.
I want to get to the bottom of it as quickly as possible. Basically, anything that doesn't make sense to me causes me anxiety.
Mm. See, I guess, but not all of it doesn't make sense to me. Like, at the end of the day, like knowing, like, oh, I have the flu, is still like, what a dumb thing for a body to do.
Yeah.
Like, what a silly world we live in that this is how it happens. That we're just, like, sort of floating through bacteria all the time.
Yeah.
And that sometimes that bacteria overwhelms
us. Really gets
us. Then we have to, or these virus, I guess the flu is a virus, isn't it? But, you know, like, it's just so silly.
Yeah, it is. And sad.
Right.
I get so sad when I'm sick. Like, we've talked about it on this podcast before. Like, I'll just, like, sign up for Tinder so that I can find someone to take care of me. And then I'll get better and I'll just cancel Tinder every time.
Not that I'm saying it doesn't make me a little sad, but some of that stuff is, like, the ridiculousness of it, I think, sometimes buoys me.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a very, like, like the insignificance of ourselves to me is a very liberating idea. Yeah. It's like, oh, I mean nothing. And so I can sort of do whatever.
Yeah.
including die.
Yeah, including die.
Yeah.
No, including
I think
be born.
Always suffered from an absolutely overinflated sense of my own importance. Like, I feel like I can treat like the most everyday decisions with like a weight that they don't deserve and I don't deserve. Like, and I've always been like that. I've like always, I was like such a serious little kid. Like, I've always been like, everything's very important.
Well, it's funny because it's like, I do think I have an ego and like, I certainly believe I will do quote good things, but I sort of zoom out and go like, but what do they matter?
Yeah.
Like, whatever those things are, whether it's like, I think I'll be successful in the entertainment industry, or I think like I am like a person who can like help people through. It's just like, what is it? It's all silly.
Is there anything that that like is hard for you to look at that way? Is there anything that like that trips you up or that you will get hung up on or that feels like it matters in a way that makes it like harder to be like light about it?
I have to think. I'm sure there is, but I don't have like a gut reaction to what that thing is. Also, I think some of this is like has changed as I've gotten older, where I like feel like I maybe used to worry about relationship stuff more, and I feel like I don't as much anymore. Like, I think some of that is I notice, you know, like getting older means, but also we're not that old. But like not being a 23-year-old who is like so like concerned with his place in the world.
Absolutely.
Maybe in 15 years I'll come out on the other end and be like, oh no, now like I'm open. The only thing I know is that everything changes, right?
Yeah.
So it's like I'm open that this is like a temporary stasis.
Yeah.
That in 15 years I might be like worried about dying again.
Yeah.
So right now I'm like 30 and, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty nice chunk of life.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I feel like I've gotten significantly less worried as time has gone by.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's also like I feel, I don't know when it turns, but it sort of feels like the older I get, the more capable and less worried I feel.
Yeah, well, you feel.
I'm
like,
sure at a certain point you get like in the back half of life and maybe you do get more worried, but for now I'm like, oh God, I can't. Like the people who pine for when they were younger are so ridiculous to me. Because it's like, what do you really miss about being 19? Jesus.
I don't miss it. I feel like.
But some people really do.
I know.
Those friends who are like, I'm turning 30 and I don't know what to do. It's like, what are you talking about?
I truly feel like every additional year I live, I just learn how to do it better.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's, and the things get better. Like the things inside and outside of my control sort of get better. And those feed into each other because it's like, I do think probably empirically things have gotten better for me.
Yeah.
But also it's like my ability to deal with those things also gets better. So sometimes it feels like this like
like an upward,
where it's like, everything's getting better on both ends.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think
but I wonder
in general.
when that changes, or if it is to change.
Well, I mean, I think one of the ways in which it changes, and I don't, you know, I think this part is universal, but I don't think it necessarily answers the question, is that, like, you know, I remember all the times that I've walked into a doctor's office in like the last 10 years, basically in my 30s, and I thought to myself, oh, I've got this like really tragic thing happening to me, and the doctor was essentially like, no, you don't, because you're 30 years old, and if you had something really terrible happening to you, it would show, because you're 30, and things are not supposed to be terrible happening
to
you.
Your body would be like, uh-uh.
Yeah, exactly. Like, anytime that I thought I would have...
I gotta alert him to this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no way that I have cancer, because anyone who's been a doctor for this long would be able to at least see, or at least there would be certain symptoms that were present immediately. And then you get to a certain age and I think those symptoms become less present inherently. Like,
because
your
big sack of meat is starting to fall apart.
Right. Yeah. And I guess at 26, they say like the sack of meat starts to fall apart. Like, that's when you stop growing up and you start, you know, fading out.
I didn't know that,
but,
actually.
But yeah, I mean, I think up until, like, I'll be 40 this year, and I'm starting to feel that thing where I don't inherently feel good unless something bad is happening. Most days when I wake up, I feel a little bit sore.
Now, does 40 alarm you as an age? As I'm talking, because I do think it's ridiculous when people are like, I'm turning 30, I'm old. I also sort of do when people say it's 40, but I understand that is actually older than 30.
Yeah.
But I, to me, it's still not, it doesn't feel very old.
Not old at all.
I made like a couple a couple like sort of big life changes before it, which is something I've heard frequently, in particular as regards career, that if you're going to make a big career change, do it before 40.
Oh,
and
interesting.
So, and I remember at 30.
For emotional reasons or professional reasons?
I don't know. I would imagine
both.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like for professional reasons, if you're 45 and being like, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah.
It's probably like, is harder to break in at that age, and yet also you aren't suited to being like a 24-year-old who's like, I'm going to get a master's at night and do this job, and just like knock it out.
No, I mean, I think we've all been in like an improv class or something with like somebody who's like, you know, twice as old as everyone else. And on the one hand, you're very inspired that mm-hmm. someone would choose to make that decision. On the other hand, you sort of like, you feel a little bit bad for them, you know? Like, now, it's just that combination.
Here's an interesting counterexample to me is when I first moved to New York, I was a teacher for like 3 years, mm-hmm. and I taught special ed through this program in New York called New York City Teaching Fellows. And it's very similar in construct to TFA that people know, but very different in mission.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it's like about bringing like new people into needy classrooms, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so they're basically going to give you a transitional license to teach while giving you a master's at night to train you. So you're like being effective. Like you get some training before, but it's not like go to school for 3 years and then you can teach. It's like do the summer thing to start and get you ready.
Yeah.
And then we're going to put you in a classroom that needs someone who cares. And then at night you're going to get a master's to sort of be like catching up. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is TFA, it's much more concerned with like the teacher than the student to me, where it's like they fully expect that these like, you know, like young, smart, privileged kids are like going to go teach in Biloxi, Mississippi for 2 years and then fucking leave. And that's part of their mission is like they'll bring that. Hopefully they'll bring that experience with them into the Goldman Sachs or wherever they work next. Yeah. They'll like care about these communities because they have hands on experience. Yeah. New York City Teaching Fellows is trying to reach out to people that will stick around. And so they. It's less young people and more career changers.
Okay,
most of the program is people who did something else and were like, fuck this. Like, it was a ton of people who, like, worked in finance or did whatever and were like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. Like, I want to do something that feels positive to me. So most of everyone in those master's classes were, like, older. Career change. Yeah. And you know, I don't know exactly the demographic, but probably a good third were over 40.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, that's
but,
cool.
But it didn't feel sad at all because it felt like people who had been, like, you know, I found like the next chapter.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, I think some of that is changing for our generation that it's like people of our age are less likely to like work at, like the amount of time you work at one job is like shrinking.
People
are bouncing around. So I guess maybe we have a different lens through to see that too, that I saw that and was like, yeah, no, duh, of course you should bounce around. You shouldn't be like, you know, like our parents who felt like they had to work for GE their whole lives to get their 401k or whatever. So like, it's like through that lens that it was like interesting. This is seen as cool.
Yeah.
And that almost you would be buoyed to like, push yourself past what you normally would.
And in my case, I'm sure it's influenced by the fact that I don't have to like worry about a mortgage or children or anything like that. I'm sort of free to be. I'm very free to say this is going to be a new chapter of my life. Like I'm not buoyed to any facet. Like if I wanted, I'm not going to. But if I wanted, I could just decide to leave Los Angeles tomorrow and go literally anywhere I want and try to do anything I want. And no one will really be affected. And so, I think that changes things. The number of things that I think you are attached to by 40 probably has an influence over how you feel about the age. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I think I'm sort of inherently
naturally those attachments are like just like the thermodynamics of getting old is that like you're bound to end up sort of accidentally getting married or having some kids, like whether you want to or not, it might just happen.
Yeah. And I didn't, and maybe I should be sad about
it. No,
I love when people aren't sad about that.
I'm not.
I mean, it's like all like the leftist in me, the like syndical anarchist Chomsky school wants to like rebuke every single like social model that doesn't fully like make sense for our lives. So like people who like choose to be conscientious objectors of marriage or whatever, like do it.
Especially
find
after the
your
thing
joy
that we talked about earlier, which is that I don't know how far along into my existence I am. Like you said, we don't know when we're going to die. We don't know when we were going to be born. Currently, I've been alive for approximately 40 years. What percentage of my existence is that? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
And I also don't know what I'm going to gain in the second, you know, like assuming that I'm at the halfway point, you know, and statistically you would say I'm around the halfway point
but probably less.
Yeah.
But I understand that.
That like chances are, you know, similar to what you were saying, a lot of the making sense of my experience is about to come. Like that first half was more of the experiences and the second half is more of the perspective on those experiences. So I definitely think that, well, I've smoked enough weed so that I probably am not smarter than I was half of my life ago. But I feel like I'm much less scared of my own life, which has got to be a good thing, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
And you made some, like, you made I would say several significant life changes. Yeah. So you made a career change.
Quit smoking.
Wait, what was your previous career?
Well, I just was exclusively a writer, and then, like, in the last year, I started a school for pilot writing.
So I knew that, and I didn't know if we were lumping, like, comedy as the new career, and you were going to, I didn't know if you were going to be like, oh, no, I worked for the, you know. So Department of Agriculture for 14 years. And like 6 years ago, I took a UCB class and started writing.
That is what happened right before 30, though. Not the Department of Agriculture, but yeah, I just like worked at a law firm in Detroit, and then I went through a breakup and moved, you know, went to New York where I had a bunch of friends because I went to college in New York. And so I went back there, spent some time with friends.
That was like your foray to the creative arts.
Yeah.
And so here's a question. Is like this transformation you're talking about now almost to me feels like a refinement or an expansion of what you were on and not like a total like reversal.
No, it wasn't a reversal at all. No, if anything, it was I moved out here and I felt like I had a certain amount of time where I could really devote myself to the creative aspect of the career without getting either jaded or disappointed in whatever. And and I was right about it, that like after about 5 or 6 years of doing it, I found that like the fight to be a writer in Hollywood was it was not persevering inside of me. Like, I still love writing. I love every aspect of scripts, but the idea of like having to work my ass off just to get the attention of the industry, it really waned, and it waned very quickly. And I found that like when it started to wane, none of the good things happened anymore. I came out here, I wrote a couple of scripts, I sold them because I am a good writer. But a big part of it was that I just didn't think that there was any reason why I wouldn't sell them, because I didn't know enough about the industry to suggest that like if you did a really good job, you wouldn't be rewarded for it.
Right.
And then I got a little rewarded and I started to work harder at it and started to see, you know, the way that the industry actually works. And then I couldn't sell anything anymore because I was too in my head about so many different aspects of it. And I realized that like what I like doing more than anything is, this sounds stupid, but what means the most
jerking
to me
off.
Is jerking off in public. And I could get people to pay like $450 for a class just to watch it. What I like more than anything is like having some part in that in like another person's feeling that like, that they did something great, like being that person that inspires in you the belief that you're good enough, that you can do whatever it is that you set out to do. And then coupling that with the amount of effort that I had put into learning how to write, that like that was the class that I could teach. And people like come out of the class feeling like I helped them to achieve something that they didn't believe that they were capable of at least 2 or 3 months before they sign up for the class. And then that's what works for me. It takes the thing that I enjoy doing and it couples with the thing that makes me feel good about myself. And it's like that's what I was meant to do. Not necessarily that I was meant to sell all these scripts, that if I didn't sell those scripts, no one would probably take my class. And by people taking my class, I feel like I have the kind of positive influence that that makes me feel good about me. And I don't necessarily have every waking moment a good feeling about me. So it was good.
It's also that kind of thing where, well, two things. One is like, I do believe all we know is that everything changes. So it's like, this is you now that in 5 years could be like, wow, it was weird teaching, focusing on teaching for 5 years meant that then I had this other idea for a script that I sold. Sure. It was the best one I've ever done because like I was in a different frame of reference. But then the other thing I was going to say is, this is, goes back to something we were talking about yesterday. And, but I always am like enthusiastic about people who find, who are like pleased to like, extricate themselves from the bullshit of this industry.
Right. Yes.
We were, this is not what you're saying, but like we were talking about it yesterday about like the people who like quit.
And
like how it's like, I loved that they're not failures. People were like, you know, I did this for like 10 years and I said like, it's a lot of nonsense and I want to do it. So I just like, now I work at this job and I have this wife and kids. Like to me that sometimes if the person has that attitude about it, I'm like, God bless you for not sticking around and doing all this nonsense, which is not what you're saying,
but
that choice to be like, actually this part of it, I don't really want to deal with anymore because I don't seek validation in that way. So I'll like focus my efforts elsewhere and let like whatever happens happens. It's like, oh, I love it when people say that.
Yeah, it's great.
And not that everyone has to do that either. Yeah. Some people are more like, actually, it doesn't bother me. It's like, oh, it's fine. But it's like when it's clear that that decision is out of a person trying to like preserve their own happiness. Yeah. I'm like, oh, thank God.
And then you realize
there's nothing sadder than the person that you don't believe they want to be doing.
Right. It's almost like, you don't think you can do it, literally anything else. Or you would. You would go and do literally anything else. I tend to have, kind of, you know, piece together a sort of a flowing logic in the similar way to you were when you were talking about your conversations with Aaron as regards this, where it'll be like, you know, for all the years, like up until I moved here and then for the first 5 years of living here, I always just assumed like this is what I want to do. I want to be a writer and I want to have success as writing, and things sort of started to change a bit. And I got very interested in this teaching thing. And from here now, my brain thinks that in 5 years, ideally, I'll be running a studio or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And I never had that ambition just as a writer, even though it's A to C. We're not talking about A to Z. It's just like one skip of a letter.
Yeah.
You get to B and suddenly you realize there's
and
a different
path. And it's like
path.
That A, B, C totally exists and lots of people have done it. But it's like
so
you
many.
Never thought like
never.
That B would lead to that C, mm-hmm. even though there's tons of people whose B has led to that C.
Yeah.
And if like my mom or somebody even mentioned that to me, I would have cursed her out on the phone. I was like, I'm a writer, God damn it.
Yeah.
No, and then like, and I still am to some extent. In as much as I'm anything, I'm just a guy who's doing the things that I do that, trying to get a little pleasure out of it. But ultimately, it's just like there was an impetus for a change and I just went with it.
Yeah, it's all random. That's my point, too. It's like that you had no control over that impetus for change happening, but it did. And then where you take control is going like, oh, then you know what? I'm going to follow this thing. Or I'm going to piggyback off this thing.
And it, I feel like, activated a bunch of things that you've always been good at. Because I feel like from the time we've been friends, you've always sort of like had this inclination, like it's hard to say this without sounding stupid, but like an inclination to like help people or whatever. And like, you know, a very intuitive sense of like the kind of assistance that somebody needs. And you've always been a fucking killer writer, specifically great at writing pilots. And so it's like also like super cool to be like, wait a second, those two things, there's a thing where those two things live together and like inform each other and make each other better.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's almost like the longer you're just like around in the world, the longer you like figure out the things that you are actually like very good at or like very good at or like very much love. And then like they find a way to like come together in a really satisfying way, I feel.
Definitely. Thanks for interviewing me, guys.
Hey, it's always good to have a guest on. Guys, you've been listening to Activating Yourself with Madeline and Josh.
It's almost a shame you guys didn't have any recording devices on this hike because there was a lot of good that came out of
there. We really covered a lot of ground.
I know. It was sort of a pre-interview.
I have had conversations like that and the feeling that why doesn't anyone just carry around podcast recording equipment with them, because you have so many conversations when you're like either just like walking up a hill or around a certain the reservoir or whatever. Like
I'm apt to mock that idea a lot of the times of like just like there is a certain bit of like the podcasting phase that we're in right now that feels like what I joke about with improv too, this lazy man's art where it's finally I can just like record myself talking.
Yeah. Right,
but then the other part of me thinks it's going to be this weird way that we have documented, like a certain sect of this generation has documented themselves.
Yeah.
That it'll be like when they look back, like this is when portraits were invented.
Yes.
So everybody went and stood still for an hour and got these portraits taken.
Right,
and isn't
it such
a strange look into how they wanted to present themselves and what they thought was important.
Yeah.
I now sort of think also that this will be this thing that in 50 years, people are like, everybody just wanted to sit down and interview their friends.
Yeah, everyone just talked aimlessly for like between 1 and 2 hours.
Mark Maron lucked into success.
Yeah, he really
everybody's
did.
Like, I could find a way to like talk to my friends.
Yeah.
I definitely.
Which is not me denigrating this. Everything's stupid. That's my point. But like,
it is.
There is like this interesting aspect of like, I wonder what this will end up in 40 years becoming.
Yeah.
No.
Do you think? Oh, sorry. I interrupted you.
No, go on.
Do you? Because this is. Stop me if this is off topic, but do you ever try to sit around and do the exercise of like, I wonder what in 50 years we will mock about ourselves now?
Oh, all the time.
That's my favorite thing to think about.
What is your answer to that? Fun.
I don't have a clear answer.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
usually like just comes where you'll notice a thing and be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on in what context we're talking about it, where it's like politically there's things like global warming that I'm like, this is the thing we'll most be like, that was boneheaded.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, like there are things that I think more than other issues will be that. But like even just culturally, I mean, there's the easy answers of just like, the ways in which we broadcast ourselves via social media.
Yeah.
Or
that
like,
always feels dumb.
This
like,
is,
that
this
like
is,
feels,
I mean, this is not interesting, but
no,
it's like,
but
like looking back at how much like hashtags as a promotional tool were used, you know, like that'll be easily mockable.
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
You know.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah, because I'm trying to remember, obviously, the 50 years part. We haven't been alive long enough.
No.
But just thinking back to, like, the 90s or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I can think of things categorically, but I couldn't remember. Like, I would, like, if this was 20 years from now, I would, the thinking would be you would have a response like, oh my God, hashtags, you know, yeah, like yeah. we haven't thought of hashtags I mean, in 15 years
the truth
or whatever.
Is
like,
we don't yeah. know most yeah. of the things because no, I think we, all of us are basically yeah. self-obsessed. Yeah. So it's like most of the things that you're like worried will make impact do not.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But there is that sort of like weird things that get in the zeitgeist that are like sure. the Zach Morris phone yeah, or whatever yeah, yeah, that like yeah. people have just like decided is like, what a silly yes. thing about that world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, you know, big shoulders on yeah, 80s ladies yeah, jackets. Yeah, yeah. You know, there are these weird little things that we've decided like that was definitely. Ridiculous about that time. I'm sure there were 400 other ridiculous yes, things, yes. but for whatever reason, some like
someone
get
like
stuck in the
put it
gears.
In a TV show that was like in syndication for long enough that right. it like becomes a thing. Where
that's
like,
why
isn't
I think
that crazy?
Like we were. I was showing yeah. Madeline RuPaul's Drag Race. Last oh yeah, night, yeah. she'd never seen.
Yeah,
but like Rue so is heavy on the hashtags for every yeah. single thing, and a lot of shows do that. But I'm sure. always reminded of that. Of like, wow, in yeah. 40 years when you watch her being like. And your next right. challenge is whatever. And like yeah. trying for a brand to try and engage an anonymous community of like, yeah. and you can weigh in with hashtag whatever.
Right, right.
I think we'll be so yeah. much like,
it'll be like what?
Like seeing, you know, all of these like Diet Sprite tweets. Yeah. I think we'll, yeah. to a future generation, be like, what a silly thing.
What a silly
where people
yeah.
thought
silly
that brands
thing.
Wanted, that people wanted to engage with brands.
Yeah.
And
brands
that
as though
they were mostly
people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah
no, corporations they, are yeah. people, my friend.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I've noticed about our definitely dying Twitter page
yeah,
or whatever
yeah.
is like the sheer number of people that follow us who are just human bots, you know,
yeah.
like they're just like they've got 50,000 followers and they follow 49,000
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
And it's just like
right.
they're just they glom on to a thing with the hopes that you'll glom back.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, it feels extremely
and they're like
ridiculous.
Not wrong.
No, but they're not
but
human.
They're, yeah. yeah. That like my friend was talking about how yesterday some like granola bar company followed him on Instagram and
yeah,
liked
yeah.
all his posts because he'd been on a hike. You
yeah,
know, and
yeah.
it's like just thinking of like he had posted yeah. a thing on a hike and then an energy bar company
yeah.
just like liked like yeah. and just thinking of the human whose edict it is to find people on hikes and do that because
yeah.
the, and again they're not wrong because it's like energy
yeah it's just the next logical
well, it's
step
just like
after
brand awareness where it's like, put a fucking sign
oh,
everywhere
yeah,
and ultimately
yeah, yeah.
our dumb chimpanzee brains will
yeah.
be like actually McDonald's
yeah.
does
like yeah.
sound good
yeah, yeah.
But they're like they're not wrong to find a new way to basically just like make you brand aware
no.
but it's so ridiculous
it's so, mm-hmm. this kind of a good segue to our game today,
yes.
Which is called Kombucha, Gross or Cool.
Great. Wonderful.
So we're going to taste some kombuchas and rate
Great.
Them all based on how gross or cool they
yeah.
are. But so like basically a kombucha in general, it's just a tea. It's not sweetened or it's not necessarily sweetened. And it's made by just, I can read it to you. The process of making kombucha is fairly simple. Black or green tea is sweetened with sugar. So I guess you... put some sugar in there to for
so
the
that it can ferment.
Yeah. So then a bunch of bacteria
you need
and
a
yeast.
Sugar to ferment, right? Or
I don't
do
know.
I not understand how things work?
I guess you do need a sugar. Because like the sugar
that.
In grapes ferments and that's what makes
that's what
wine,
I thought.
Right? Oh. Okay. So then you throw bacteria and yeast into your pot of tea. And then it's fermented for at least a week, during which time microbe production speeds up because the bacteria eats the sugar and uses it to multiply. So that's why you want the sugar. And
there
then you get a rubbery disc on top of the tea called the SCOBY, which stands for Symbiotic Colony of Bacteria and Yeast. Great.
Hey.
I think we should start with... this is GT's kombucha. It's like a pretty popular brand. It's my brand of choice, I think, usually because it's the cheapest. But this is original kombucha, so it's not flavored with anything. It's just, well, the ingredients say it's just GT's organic raw kombucha and 100% pure love.
So
the second feels less informative.
Cool. One means it's gross, five means it's cool, and three means it's...
neither
cool.
gross nor cool.
Some combination of gross and cool.
So this is just kombucha. It's not dressed up with anything. Just original raw kombucha. That's a heavy pour. So you don't feel you have to drink the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a real heavy pour.
Yeah.
Shots. It has a lot less flavor than I thought it would have.
What did you think?
The smell is much stronger than the taste, I think. Do you guys disagree?
I agree. It kind of reminds me of like champagne.
Yeah.
It does. I think it tastes like champagne. I think it's great.
Yeah, this is champagne-y. I like it.
Yeah. I like it too.
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
No, I think it tastes bad.
Do you like champagne?
Oh, no.
Okay, I was going to say, because this does not taste that off of a champagne.
I agree with that.
It is like, you know, this is like closer to champagne than it is to milk.
Like, I would rather...
So if you, like, loved champagne but hated this, I'd be a little confused.
No. Yeah.
I don't drink, so anything alcoholic, I think maybe there's going to be... there's going to be like an adjustment
period. You drink now, brother.
That's right, yeah. I six or this stuff.
I didn't have a problem until I looked into the actual cup. And I saw there's like some particles floating around.
Yeah, that's the SCOBY, bro.
Oh, man.
Welcome to Madeline's podcast. That's the SCOBY, bro.
SCOBY, bro. So, okay, I'm going to, I mean, I think that one's straight up cool. That gets a one for me. So,
one is good.
One is, one is gross. Five is cool. So I'm going to give it a five.
That one's the GT.
GT's a ridge. I give a five.
I guess I'm going to give it for a four for now, but I could adjust these once I have the rest.
You certainly
can. Because that feels unfair. I feel like it might actually be a 4.5, but I'm trying to open myself.
Yeah.
I'll give it a two, but it might be a one.
Okay. So this is another, this is a kombucha brand I've never seen before. It's called
Just
Hum.
Just a smell. Real smell.
So you hate it.
It smells.
This is a fancy flavor. This is pomegranate lemonade kombucha. Mm-hmm. And it has, so this one is less, well, I won't, this one's, oh, I won't tell you. I'll let you try it first.
What brand is that?
Hum.
Hum.
Yeah.
Wait, did they give a score?
Oh, Zig, what's your score?
I was going to give it a four, but then I got the SCOBY, like one of it actually stuck to my lips. So I'm going to knock it down to a three.
Ugh. A bunch of mold stuck right to your lip.
What are you guys doing with your leftover? Or did you drink it?
I drank it all.
Yeah, I drank it all.
But you don't have to.
Do you have a new cup?
Or dump it in
dump
the,
it in the trash.
You have hardly any.
I'll take your trash out. Dump it in the trash.
It's full anyway.
Oh, that one's better.
This one's grosser to me.
That one's much better.
Yeah, this one, I can tolerate this.
Yeah, that one sort of tasted like a soda.
Yeah, that one doesn't like a Japanese taste kombucha as much to
no,
me.
No, this one, I don't like. This one tastes like dirty lemonade to me.
So we've all agreed this one's going to get a six.
This one's grosser to me than the just kombucha one.
What's this one? Lemon?
Yes, lemon, pomegranate lemonade flavored.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not fizzy. I like that it kind of hurts your tongue with how fizzy it is.
I'm
going to give this a three.
I'm going to give it also a four.
Oh.
I sort of like the taste a little more, but it doesn't have as much of a bite.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to give it a four.
Okay.
Four for me.
I bet we'll find one that's like sort of the same kombucha strength as the first, but has a little cut of lemonade, and
I'll like it.
I like the cut for sure.
Yeah, you probably want a GT's lemonade flavor.
Probably want a GT's lemonade flavor.
It's entirely possible. Like I don't like the flavor of that first one now, but it's entirely possible that'll be the one that I ultimately like the most. I mean, I know when I first had coconut water, I thought it was just horrible. Mm. Now it's the only thing I drink.
Yeah.
Only thing I drink.
Okay, this one.
You got that natural raw.
Beware.
That's the best.
Yeah, the harvest.
It was so good.
That's the guy.
This one has cayenne in it. This one's a cleansing.
This is
a cleansing kombucha. This might be a little spicy.
I'm not a fan of the color of this.
Is it too yellow?
It looks a little bit like flim.
It is a thickie.
A thickie.
All right, does everybody have some?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Ugh. I think this one's...
I like it.
Yeah, it's my number two.
Tastes like soaps to me.
What's this one?
I honestly feel like I could mix the last one with this one and really love it. Like,
do you want to try it?
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Because I like the bite on that one. But I feel like if I had a touch of sweet in there too, I might really be down.
It's a real
health aid.
It's a kombucha to make a mixed drink out of.
What was the name of this one?
This one is Health Aid Kombucha.
Okay. Health Aid.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you going to give it, Josh?
I'm giving Health Aid another four, but giving the little Health Aid Hum Shandy I made a 4.5.
Ooh,
okay, I'll try a Shandy.
Yeah, you want it? Yeah, here. You want to pour some hum in there?
Because I like that bite.
Yeah.
You know what that Health Aid reminded me of? Have you ever had those, what are they called? Remember when I used to go, when you used to take me, Madeline, to Nature Well, and I would get those wellness shots?
Yeah, yeah,
it reminds me of the wellness shot.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because Wanasha like has a bunch of cayenne in it. Yeah.
Little oil of oregano kind of thing. Yeah, it's got
Okay, so now we have...
I agree. The Shandy is the best one.
Yeah, that Shandy is good.
The Shandy. Zig, have you had a Shandy?
No, I have not. What is a Shandy?
We've mixed the last two together.
We mixed the cayenne with the...
I think I'm going to pass.
That's a five from Zig.
I think I'm gonna give this last one like a 3.5.
Okay.
The cayenne, like, it gets stuck in the back of my throat. It's like only this part of my throat is like on fire right now.
Your lower throat, is burning.
As
right
a man
now.
With somewhat mild but persistent sinus issues, the cayenne really always feels good.
Yeah. Oh,
like a
yeah.
cayenne or a ginger always, like the feeling of being opened up is always, 100%. Always fun
good,
to me.
Yeah.
I agree. Madeline, would you give the health aid?
I gave the health aid by itself a 3, but the health aid plus hum a 4.
Okay. I gave the health aid a 3 and the health aid plus hum a 4.5.
There we go.
Yeah. So I think the Shandy is the winner.
Well, we have
so
one
far
more.
We got one
oh,
more.
Oh, we have another
we
one.
We have
and
one
this
with
one's got
chia
little,
seeds.
I'm probably not going to like
which looks
one.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it looks gross to me.
I hate the way it sounds. When you're pouring, it sounds like...
And what's interesting is I can get down with like a bubble tea, but those are really big and you can sort of like enjoy them.
I
this
love
is
a
like,
bubble
this
tea.
This is so viscous. You can't like separate it from...
I think it's disgusting looking at least. It sounds gross. It sounds like you're like pouring a bunch of fish eggs into a cup.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I don't know what... Why we? I gotta look up why chia seeds are supposed to be good.
Amazing.
Because that seems to me like another...
Okay, I'm going for it.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that is bad to me.
That is... Ugh.
That one gets a 1.5.
Ben, are you okay?
They're so in your mouth.
Blech. Yuck. Blech.
You know what? If it wasn't for that feeling, the flavor's not bad.
Yeah. A very bad mouth feel.
Really
it
bad
feels
mouth
like
feel.
You're swallowing somebody else's booger.
In my mind, it felt like this would be like a Fear Factor challenge.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely, like, it felt, this one obviously felt the most alive.
Yeah. Ugh. But I think it's not even alive.
I got to clear my palate with more Shandy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to.
Frankly.
wait, so promise. There is alcohol in this? Is that why I feel drunk? I feel drunk.
Very, very little.
Trace amounts.
Trace amounts. Like,
I get drunk
like,
so quick.
I bet it's not, well, I'm about to say a thing that I know nothing about, but I was going to say, I bet it's not much more than like a, you know, like a nighttime cough syrup kind of thing.
Okay. So is Shandy the winner?
Well.
Or do we have to do math?
For me, Shandy is the winner, is the clear winner.
For me, I think.
I probably could distinguish those first three better. I gave them all 4 because I was like, I like this, but it's not quite doing it for me. But when I mixed those two, it really was good. I bet I actually like.
Ugh.
I don't know. They all sort of were good, but had like slight deficiencies to me.
Yeah.
So for different reasons, they all ended up being a 4. And I'm not even talking about that, you know, like rancid caviar one we just
that
had.
This chia seeds were
I'm going to give it a 3. And I'm going to give Health Aid then a 3.5. Now, do you guys have that feeling of, like, obviously you guys don't feel drunk. I don't feel drunk. But do you guys have the feeling of, like, having consumed alcohol a little bit?
I mean, I don't drink that much either, so I feel like a little, like...
Not me, but I'm a New Yorker, and we drink... All of us are alcoholics.
I often feel like a little...
pedestrian culture.
Yeah. True. You drink a bunch and wander
around
the streets.
I have a high tolerance for booze.
Yeah. When I drink kombucha, sometimes feel a little buzzed, but I often assume I'm just imagining it, but it makes me...
But you're a light drinker as well, so I can imagine that that's true.
Yeah.
I actually respect you all for being light drinkers, because a lot of Angelinos have a very casual relationship to drunk driving.
Yes, that
is
very
true.
A lot
of them have like 3 beers and are like, I can drive home. It's like, you probably can, but should you?
Yeah.
New York, not an option. So have 6, have 8.
Yeah. Are you a Subway or a cab home guy when you drink?
Virtually always a Subway, but now with, you know... ride-hailing apps. Occasionally, I'll use those in my neighborhood because I'm in a part of Brooklyn that there are cabs, but you're not going to just like go out on the corner and catch one.
Right.
So if I need a ride from my house somewhere, I will, but almost exclusively Subway.
Yeah,
yeah. Because
I actually like it.
Yeah.
Well, one, it's better for our environment, right? But then two, it actually becomes... Like, I like driving fine, but I don't miss it at all because subway commuting, you can be actively and not passively engaged.
Yeah.
Where it's like the best you're going to do while driving is maybe listen to a podcast.
Right,
but,
right.
Like, on the subway, you can, like, actually read a book or write something. You can, like, totally focus, you know. It always has to be sort of like in the background, whatever you want to do other than driving when you're driving.
Yeah.
Which is fun. It's like you listen to music or blah, 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 but you can't really ever focus on a task other than driving.
Well, that's why they say traffic and the shower are the two places that people have their most creative ideas because you can't do anything about them.
Oh, yeah.
I at one point thought about putting like a dry erase board in the shower for that exact reason. And then I never did it because
you get some shower crayons.
Yeah, get some shower crayons.
You can get those.
Your husband used to.
I know.
Have
that's how I know about it.
I remember the day he came up to me and he said, "I think Madeline and I are dating." And also, I have some shower crayons.
I think they were a gift. Yeah. Josh, where can we find you? And do you want to plug anything?
I have nothing to plug in the city of Los Angeles, and I'm so sorry. And
well,
also, nothing to plug in New York.
The podcast is, yeah, not only Los Angeles people listen to it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I don't have anything coming up. Oh, I guess I could say, well, this is so stupid to plug a live show on a podcast because it's like, when will you listen to it?
Yeah, well, when is the live show?
April the 14th, New York Duplex, gay show for all people. Great. It's the most fun show I get to do regularly.
Oh, that's great.
That's literally the day this comes out.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, literally the day this comes out.
Okay, we'll go to the Duplex tonight.
Yeah.
It's this dingy little gay bar off Christopher Street. It's real fun.
Awesome.
Go to the Duplex,
and
guys.
And then tell them your social medias if you want
to. Oh, I'm only on the Instagram at Cluck Cluck Josh Sharp. That's the sound a chicken makes, then Josh Sharp. I'm honestly mostly in it so that I can look at cute gay boys.
Excellent.
So if you're a cute gay boy, follow and comment dad. I often said that what I most want out of my career is what Mateo Lane has, which is a bunch of like dumb Midwestern twinks comment dad on all of his posts, and it really makes me laugh.
Yeah.
It's like this strange thing in the gay community where you're like sort of saying I look up to you, but also I want to fuck you. And for whatever reason, the short term for that is dad.
Right.
It's like, 20-year-old gay boys will write it about like handsome 30-year-old gay men. And it's like, you don't really think I'm your dad. What you're saying is that you're a gay person I want to emulate.
Yeah.
But also, it's usually with a tinge of like, and I think you're hot.
Yeah.
What a fun compliment.
It really just makes me laugh. So I've often stated that that is my overarching career goal.
Nicole Byer has said that about mom as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's the same.
And I could be off about
yeah.
there being explicitly a sexual energy, but I think there often is in the gay community.
Yeah,
it's like, I also think you're attractive. But yeah. Oh, yeah. Nicole gets a lot of moms. It's just like people of your demographic who look up to you.
Yeah.
Much less. It's like you're 7 years older than me, so it's like that's not really true. But yeah.
Well, Cluck Cluck Josh Sharp.
Thank you so much.
Follow him. Call him dad.
Call me dad.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.